And thanks again to everyone at Thread. Hope to have been a meeting. It was great. Just take this opportunity to welcome those that are joining us before we started, or since we started. I'm glad you're all here. Warm welcome to any visitors. Massive welcome to anyone that might be new to NA in the room tonight. I hope you can hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. Let me stop sharing. Okay, guys, so we do have a speaker this evening. I'm delighted to say they're going to share their experience and can hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. The journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm going to hand you over to Helene, who's going to introduce them. So, Helene, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. My name is Helene. I'm a gratefully recovering addict.
Hello, Helene.
Hi. So it is my absolute great pleasure to welcome this person tonight to come and share with us. I've met this person about a year and a month ago, and I see this person pretty much daily on a meeting. And this is yet another rock of recovery in my recovery. Really walking their talk, and such a generous recovery heart, and such great. I mean, when I think of this person, I smile because I think he's I hold him high up in my heart. And I unfortunately only have heard a few shares here and there with him from him of 3 minutes, but tonight is an opportunity of hearing more. So I'm really really opening my heart and holding space for your share, Michael. P, come and share with us. Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you for that lovely introduction, Elaine. Really, that's lovely. Michael Addict, and thank you for inviting me. It's a
Hi,
pleasure
Michael.
To be here.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Hello,
Michael.
Hello.
Michael.
I was just saying before the meeting started that I lived for a while in Scotland. And I'm not saying I know there's people here that are probably not from Scotland, but it just has a special place in my heart. The beauty of Scotland and the people brings up a lot of memories. So, yeah, it's really lovely to be here. Thank you. I'm nervous. That's, you know, especially if it was 45 minutes. Wow. I did do a 45-minute share in Dallas once online. It was like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. And so, yeah, pray to my higher power, as I always do before I do share. So I really hope it's my higher power coming through to speak tonight, and so I can get out of the way, get my ego out of the way. Yeah. Feel quite emotional, actually. Just to think what this fellowship NA has done for me. I'm clean for just over 4 years, and that's an absolute miracle. Because I guess that most of us, I couldn't get clean for 10 minutes. Even just the thought of it terrified me. Didn't think it was possible. To be without drugs. And NA has definitely saved my life, without a doubt. And from that, all the ripples that go outwards, you know, I've got 4 children, 4 beautiful children, and a wife. And I'm a productive member of society now. And in that, I also feel I'm a good father, the father I always wanted to be and felt unable to be. And it is when I think of my children that that's when I really feel my emotions. Anyway, I was introduced to NA, I feel, from my higher power many years before I even got in through the doors, about 2 years beforehand. And I was terrified to even think about it, and I pushed it away until, you know, that rock bottom, or the first of my rock bottoms, where I finally came into the rooms. And I think for the first year or so that I was in, I didn't take it well. It wasn't I didn't take it serious, I was too scared, and I had 1 foot out the door always. I only might make it to one meeting a week if I was lucky. And eventually, where that led me to, I was actually all looking back. I also can see I was trying to get off drugs. I was trying to get clean. I was trying to hand over to a higher power without even knowing, like even having a higher power or knowing what that was. And I was trying to get clean for other people, for my doctor, for my family, but not for me. And of course, that doesn't work, you know. And I learned that to my cost. I was terrified. The more I got off my, by the way, tranquilizers were my thing, and I didn't choose them, but they were the so-called solution, I thought, to the hell in my head and what I was feeling, and they became my hell. And I don't usually, I notice, I guess, because I've got more time, I don't normally say what my drug, so it's not a drug of choice, but what I was taking, what I was addicted to. Yeah, I guess because there's still a bit in me of that, you know, the disease wants to separate me. You know, when I first came in, it was like, well, I haven't done heroin, I haven't done street drugs. Well, maybe a little bit, but very little. And my thing was prescription medication. And I still remember reading on the NA website, you know, I think it said various questions about, are you an addict? And thankfully, thank God that one of them was about the little old lady that knocked over the doctors for prescriptions. That was the one I could relate to. That was the one where I thought, bloody hell, that's me. You know, that was me where I was going to different doctors, you know, getting two lots of medication and thinking that was great. But terror, you know, that reading we just read, step four was one of the ones, sorry, step four, the how it works, was one of the ones where I first related to that. When I read that statement, one is too many, a thousand never enough, that really got me. I thought, my God, I'm understood, because that's exactly how it felt. You know, I had some, I think there's a point where I might have had 150 of these pills stocked up. Was never enough, never enough. I was always terrified I was going to run out. Couldn't imagine what it would be like to be out without taking these things. They became more important to my children, my family, everything. Anyway, I was trying to get off these things through the rooms of NA, but without any knowledge of the steps, without a sponsor. Oh, I had a sponsor, but I didn't really talk to him. And anyway, where it led was yet another suicide attempt, and I'd done many, and this one was really bad. They're all bad, but this one was intensive care. I think it was 2 weks of intensive care, something like that. Apparently, I was 1 hour from death, and sometimes I'll share this. This is the insanity of my disease. When I woke up, came round after being unconscious for God knows how long, my first thought wasn't, you know, about my children, what I'd done, remorse, any of that. My first thought was to look at the nurse, look up at the drip, and say, "You have got tranquilizers in there, yeah? There we are. There is the insanity of this disease." That was all I could think about. And following that overdose, I could hardly move or walk, so I was kind of pretty much confined to the house for about 6 months. And there was no more plan B. That was it. I knew, you know, I had been seeing a therapist, and I guess that's where I had one door out of NA. And I was looking for something to save me, you know, where it says long list of psychiatrists. I've done spiritual healers. I've tried a lot, and now I realise from doing the steps, I was looking. That was my addiction. I was looking for the fix. Someone else was going to fix me. Something on the outside, in whatever form. And so, in a way, a therapist did me a favor. She ditched me. She wouldn't have put it that way, but that's what happened. And I had no plan B. So I came crawling into these rooms. This time I was completely broken. I was no hope, desperate. Something had shifted. I guess that was the rock bottom. Kind of, it was clear to me that I wasn't going to survive again. One more overdose, my body was, you know, was had it. Wasn't going to survive again. So there was, you know, all bets were off. And I didn't believe this program would work in the slightest. I thought, you know, this was my disease. I didn't know it then, but was telling you, well, you've done therapy for a lot of your life. How's gonna fill in and answer a few questions in a notebook gonna help? How is that gonna do anything? But do you know what? From what one of the reasons I like sharing, or I feel it's important for me to say yes to doing a share, is because in my early days when I heard main shares, they were the hope that kept me coming back, putting my bum on the seat. Because when I saw that person in front of me sharing whatever their story was, you know, they might be homeless, they might have been whatever their story was, and then they were sharing about they are working, they had their children back, they had their family, you know, whatever the story was, I couldn't, you know, it's like bypassed my rational, diseased-ridden mind. And I started to feel that just there was a little glimmer of hope, just maybe there was some hope here. I didn't believe it would work, but I just did it. You know, the honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. I just thought, okay. And I was so ill at the time. I was, you know, I was bedbound a lot of the time. And my sponsor, I got a sponsor, and he said, well, you know, I was resistant to the steps. I was resistant to all of it. He said, what else you got to do? So I literally, in my first three steps, I towards the end of the day, when I had a little bit of energy left, I would prop myself up on my cushions and just write for 15 minutes. And I started to notice, I guess that's where I started to notice that by doing a bit of action, I felt better. I felt better about myself. And that's how I did my first three steps. And it was nice to reread that, how it works, because for me, those first three steps, they're just the miracle. You know, for me, the finding a higher power and feeling that higher power in my life. I don't know how that happened, but it's happened. And thank Christ it has, because I know I couldn't do the rest of the steps without it. I couldn't do, I wouldn't want to do life without my beautiful higher power. So, you know, whatever that is for anyone else. But for me, I feel it. I feel it in the share. You know I can pray beforehand. I can hand this over to my higher power and it'll be all right. You know, I've got enough evidence to now. Know that somehow or other it'll be all right. It might not be the way I want it to be, but it'll be okay. I know then what I'm sharing, I put the action in, I do the share, turn up, put my bum on the seat, and maybe someone out somewhere here in the meeting tonight gets something they need to hear. Maybe they don't, but it's none of my business. You know, it's anyway. So I came back into the rooms, and I remember people saying, you know, you'll lose the desire to. It will just fall away, the desire to use. And I thought that was a miracle. That was impossible. How the, you know, what, just turning up in these meetings, it's impossible. Guess what? It happened. And again, I don't know how it happened, except just following, you know, the suggestions. And being, for me, being desperate enough, because I knew I was going to lose my family, I was going to lose everything. And I was going to lose my life. You know, if I carried on, I was going to lose my life. Guess there was in all my suicide attempts that I didn't want to die. I just could not live in the hell anymore. It was just I couldn't bear it. And I had no hope. And the Cardist Anonymous card started to give me some hope back, a glimmer of light. And I love it when I see new people, newcomers come into the meetings or people that relapse, where you start to see that quite quickly, a little bit of hope come on back in their eyes. And that's what happened for me, you know. And now I feel I have a life worth living. And really, the truth is nothing on the outside can say nothing's changed. You know, I've still, you know, got, thankfully, still got my children, still live in the same house, same wife, did have the same car, a different one now, but everything's pretty much the same. But everything has changed. My whole perception has changed. It's like, having different glasses on, having my feeling of it, it's like having these cloudy glasses on where everything was skewed and everything was not seen with any clarity to something. I'm, you know, the glasses are getting cleaner. Not saying they're completely clean, but they're getting cleaner. It is an inside job, isn't it? From the head to the heart. Definitely an inside job. And what did I need? I guess I just needed in those early days that honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, you know, the willingness to just give it a go. You know, what else did I have to do? So, and keep coming back, you know, people who say to me, don't leave before the miracle happens. And I just, again, my head would try to work that out. What does that mean? I was like, what have I got to do? What have I got to do? and the program. Tell me what the program is. Tell me what this program is to fix me, the addict in me, you know. Give me the pill, give me the solution. I'll just take it and then it'll be all right, you know. And I can see now my addiction has been running all the way through my life, not just with drugs, but in all sorts of behaviors, so-called solutions, all to escape myself, you know, all of it to escape myself. And just thinking about my children there, it's so beautiful to now be present to my children. What a gift, what a miracle. I think it was just thinking yesterday or feeling there's a beautiful spot. I live in a beautiful, you know, I'm so blessed to live in a beautiful part in Devon. And I'm still remember this moment where my kids, I was out one of the rare days I was actually out with them, and I was in hell in my head, and they looked up at the moon and they said, "So beautiful, Daddy, look." And I was so distraught, and I was such hell inside. I could not see it. I could not see this moon and this beauty. And I just felt, I can't, what's happened? You know, how, it was a moment of clarity, I suppose. What's happened to me? How am I this person now? What? I still remember that. I was just, for some reason, that came up, that memory the other day. So grateful that I can now look up the moon with my children and feel it, feel the beauty around me, be present, you know. I suppose the other thing, say, not to say this is all a bed of roses, it's bloody hard work. And you know, and just to say, I'm at the moment, I've not been feeling so great the last few days. Got probably got a bit of a cold. My bipolar, I've got bipolar disorder, is on me a bit. But you know what? What I've got is tools. Tools to deal with that. You know, I pick up the phone, I do the share like I'm sharing now. Go in meetings, I can inventory and I meditate. I can do all these things. I didn't have any of those tools before. I didn't have the manual, you know. So yeah, I'm so grateful for NA, and for that reason, you know, if I'm asked to share or do some service, then of course, if I can, then I'll do it. You know, it's the least I can do to give back a little bit of what I've gained from NA, you know. And I suppose just to, you know, I've got, it's funny, isn't it, 45 minutes. I've got to say, I find it's quite something to talk to a blank screen, not notice that anyone's out there. I'm used to seeing faces on the Zoom meetings and have reactions. So it's quite interesting. It is quite interesting. So I suppose going back in time a bit, I think when I first realized or became conscious, should you say, of absolute, guess, you know, because I've got bipolar disorder, probably was born with it. And so I had it when I first became aware of myself or more conscious as a teenager. I hated myself. You know, I realized now I was just depressed, you know, and I didn't know it back then. I hated myself, and I hid it. You know, I didn't feel able to tell anyone or talk about anything. My head was always has been very loud, very critical, and I really believed and felt that I was ugly. There's something wrong with me. You know, the hole in, I see that now as the hole in the soul. You know, that's, and I can see now. You know, I grew up in a family. My dad was, he of I feel he had bipolar disorder too. He was undiagnosed. He committed suicide when I was 23, which I can feel now is probably from that, because my granddad also had manic depression and was diagnosed in his, I don't know, 80s or something. But it's, you know, it's all, it's in the family, which is very normal. But my dad was not there. He was a workaholic. My mum was lying in bed with depression as well, and she laid in bed most of my upbringing. So they were both addicts. They were both in their own, and I have a lot more compassion and understanding now of them. They were in their own hell. They could not possibly be there for me or their children. So I suspect somehow or other I grew up with a feeling there must be something wrong with me. This is how I, not consciously, but how I must have picked it up. There is something wrong with me. I must be unlovable. And then I try to become, I guess, this, try to be perfect. Try to be the way I tried to deal with it is be the good boy, because I was scared my dad was going to die. I could see he was exhausted. So I tried to make it okay. I guess thinking about it, I tried to fix him. I tried to fix them. I tried to not make any trouble. I was given lots of messages around not to do that. And it was a dysfunctional home, but when you're growing up, in my growing up, I didn't have anything to compare it to. So when I went to friends, I suppose, what do you do as a kid? Just have to accept it. And I still remember the first, I know, and then surprise, surprise, my first, I guess it was my first addiction was work. I became a workaholic from the age of 13. I went to work part time. Well, I became very studious at school. It's literally overnight. I decided I'm just going to work. And because, it took me out of my head. But guess what? As soon as I stopped working, I was back on myself, back in the hell. And then I found my first bit of alcohol, and that was it, off and running. The way that felt, that changed the way I felt. I was the life and soul of the party. I was probably an idiot, really, but it felt amazing to be totally feel different, and so I used alcohol a lot for my life, to numb myself. I really, in my growing up as I got older, didn't feel I could actually enjoy myself without getting completely pissed, basically, and couldn't understand people that didn't. I was in a lot of pain. And I suppose the other one was obviously, as I just mentioned, when I did a geographic, I didn't know that's what it was, but came up this, the addict's mind co comes up with these wonderful, fantastic solutions. And I thought my solution was once I finished my degree, which I did part time and stayed at home, and my solution was I knew I was really, I didn't like myself. And I knew there was something wrong. I never knew to talk to anyone about it. Didn't think that was so possible. And so my solution was, oh no, I'll go off traveling. And then that's going to force me to be with people and become more confident. So very, very quickly, and maybe that's part of the bipolar, it probably was, I just gave up my job, went off backpacking. And boy, was I in hell then for the months, because I was just with myself, and with one other person who I didn't know that well. It was hell. So I was in these beautiful places in beaches, Thailand, all over Far East, and I was in hell. Because in my head, I was just, it didn't matter where I was. It didn't matter if I was in paradise. It was still in hell because I was with myself. So, surprise, surprise, geographics do not work. And then I got to Singapore, and I got a telegram. Back then, it's just post-restant. There was no internet, no instant communications. You picked up your letters every so often in various places. So I got to Singapore, and there was a telegram waiting for me. And I thought, well, what's that? And I was, oh, I feel quite emotional now to say that. Still, I got a telegram saying my dad had died, and I just was in shock. I didn't know how to do feelings. No one had modeled for me that feelings were okay. They just seemed, particularly anger. There's a lot of anger in my house and a lot of anger subdued. So I just didn't know it was okay. And I had no idea about feelings. So I was numb. I guess that's what I did, just numbed myself. And then first, my first feeling was that great, I can come home now. It was like a relief that I can come home and be away from where I was, because I wouldn't have didn't know it back then, but I was terrified. I was terrified to be out there in the world, in my head, trying to pretend to be okay. Anyway, I came home with this crazy idea that, I'd go back off traveling again shortly. And of course, I started to dawn on me, the reality was I had a mother who was lying in bed, didn't ever get out of bed, very ill, and I, took on my dad's role of codependent. Well, that was another addiction, codependency, looking after her. And I just remember this, the mismatch in my head between pretending to be all, this is classic codependency, which I know now, but classic mismatch between looking after her, acting as if I was this loving, dutiful son. What a beautiful person I am. Underneath, I was in absolute seething with rage. I just wanted her to die. I just felt a solution, felt like the only way out of this hell was if she died. And then, of course, all the guilt that goes with that, real, real hell. Poof. And anyway, I'm not going to go into too many details, but it's just sort of funny to talk. We talk about that difficult time. Anyway, eventually, I did get myself back to work, different career, because another part of my addiction, it was the job. It was the job that was a problem. If I just changed my career, it'd be all better. All that classic addiction stuff, which I didn't know about back then. I didn't know I was an addict. And finally, I know what I suffer from. So, yeah, moved, jobs, moved houses, all the stuff, trying to run away from myself. But guess what? I can't run away from myself. I can't run away from my head. I'm in it to the day I die. So NA is my opportunity to start working on that, to be with myself, just to be. And that critical, I hear that in the rooms, from other people, so I know I'm not alone. I know I'm in the right place. That critical voices or voices that I've got in my head that tell me I'm a piece of shit or I'm this or I'm that, or I'm still so scared of making mistakes, getting it wrong, not being perfect. It's exhausting, and it's impossible, Was that me? Perfect. Absolutely impossible. Yeah. So I think, my step work, step four, step five, just, really starting to, open that engine up and stop looking at all this stuff, getting it out, and understanding things, the jigsaw pieces, and wading through it or sharing it with another person, with my higher power. What an amazing experience to finally, because, looking back, big part of all this shit and the effects it's had on me is because I didn't talk about it. I didn't share it. I kept it all hidden down like a pressure cooker, which is impossible, because it comes out one way or the other. It leaks out. Maybe it turns into an illness, whatever, but it doesn't disappear. Anyway, so coming back into NA or coming to NA was done years and years of therapy. And yeah, it helped, but it didn't really touch myself because I didn't know I was an addict. I didn't know what was going on. And there's been so many miracles I received from this program. And relatively, 4 years is, well, feels like a lot, but it's not a lot. It's the change in my life in that 4 years is miraculous. I feel like a different person. And one of the beautiful things is I've got people in these meetings, particularly online when I do in the morning, that were there in my early days. They can reflect back to me the differences, or how I was back then. I need to hear that stuff, It's hard for me to see myself, and it's why I need this fellowship. I need connection. I need people to reflect back to me some reality. Because my head distorts it all and will tell me I'm different, that I don't belong. I only in these tools, I only have to sort of miss a few things and I start to feel it. So, I play that forward a bit and say, well, what would it be like if I didn't do a meeting for a week or a month or didn't do this, got a pretty good idea where it would end. It wouldn't be long before I'd be back in that hell again. And thankfully, that scares me enough to keep doing this stuff, and I think that was the other thing is my early days. I thought when I thought about all this stuff, coming to meetings, doing all these tools, doing this work, it felt so depressing to me. It felt like, oh my God, really? I thought I could just come in here, get fixed, and we're done. But now I love NA. I found purpose in my life, which I've never had before in my life. I've gone through life rudderless. I found purpose in NA, and I love coming to meetings. This is my life. These are my people. I feel heard here. I feel understood. I can relate to people in NA, and the fellowship and the friendship and the love I've had in these rooms is staggering. It still staggers me. Just got to say also shout out for online meetings. It's when I started to get clean, it was COVID. And I remember this day that I did a physical meeting in Torquay. I was still trying to get clean, and it's quite a big meeting. And next day, all got shut down, all locked down. No one even knew that was coming. And I remember thinking, well, that was my disease. I say, well, now you're fucked, don't you? How is there a higher power then? And I thought I was terrified. So I thought I really had had it. And suddenly, that was maybe one of the first times I started to see the miracle, this fellowship, what we can achieve together. Suddenly, all these meetings went sprung up online. And you know what? The ironic thing in all that lockdown, I've never been more connected to people. Never in my life. Certainly during the hell of my addiction for the first 5 years prior to that, I was the loneliest person ever. I didn't have any connection with anyone. Suddenly, I could go onto the, and this is good for me because I was struggling to get out the door, like panic attacks, awful anxiety. So it's quite hard for me to get to face meetings. So I used to literally, in my early days, sit on my bed with my tablet and hit the button, and I was connected to people all around the world and to my local fellowship. And then gradually, I put my camera on. Gradually, I sat at my desk. It was just, to me, it was staggering. It couldn't have been better, in terms of my early days, and I'm really grateful for that. So I know COVID was obviously a lot, very painful for a lot of people, but for me, it was miraculous. And then just to say, I don't often talk about my mental health so much, but maybe it's a bit of confusion, shame about that. Is it okay to talk about mental health, or a bit of fear I'll be judged because I take prescription medication, because I take mood stabilizers, and I'm so thankful for them. It was life-saving for me in conjunction with LA and doing the work. I suppose I can't really not talk about it. It's such a massive part of my life that I've really lived my whole life with bipolar without even knowing it. And so when I first got clean, I was getting off these tranquilizers, and I was doing all the right things. I was doing all the suggestive things, service, meetings, et cetera, the step. I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And that was effing scary because it was like no plan B. Hang on a minute. I'm seeing other people get clean and get better, and I was getting worse. And this is another example of many, many, many miracles I've had in NA. I was in that meeting in the morning, big meeting, and this guy, I'll be ever thankful for this, from the other side of the world in Australia. If I ever want to have an example of how we're all interconnected, reached out to me. He'd obviously be seeing my mood swings because I was basically coming in for maybe 10 days or so and then disappearing in depression. And he said, he suggested to me, I think he might have bipolar, these rapid cycles, which I didn't know existed. Anyway, I was terrified because I'd had my fill of psychiatrists and doctors misdiagnosing me and just judging me. It was horrible. I went through some real hell and I was really anti all that. But I guess there we are again, another rock bottom where I thought, well, okay, I've got to do something about it. And I didn't know who to contact, privately. And it was literally, I remember this, my higher power felt whispered in my ear. You've got a psychiatrist number in your shivering when I think about this. You've got a psychiatrist number in your phone. And 2 years before I'd gone to it was an AA meeting actually. And I guess this guy must have recognized that I had some mental illness stuff going on. And he gave me the number of a psychiatrist, very good psychiatrist he used. And I stuck it in my phone because I was terrified. There's no way I was going anywhere near a psychiatrist. And 2 years later, my higher power reminded me, I guess, I was meant to go to that meeting. No such thing as coincidences. Anyway, I phoned the psychiatrist and all over Zoom very quickly. I got, I think within a week or so, got diagnosed with bipolar disorder and started taking medication. And quite quickly, boy, did I feel better. It gave me enough stability to actually do this work. To do recovery, whereas before that I didn't have the stability. I wasn't able to really do recovery. I was so struggling with it all. And so for me, medication is a lifesaver, literally. But I've got to say, for me, in conjunction with NA, they both work hand in hand beautifully. So I suppose I feel like if I was just squashing the pills down, not doing any work on myself. Don't think that would be working very well. But the two together, lifesaver. I love that pamphlet in Times of Illness, which puts it all in there so beautifully about medication and illness, and read that many times. It's helped me to come to more okayness with all this, that stuff. Am I clean with taking medication? Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. I have to watch this because I notice myself want to start justifying it. I don't need to justify myself. So there's an example of the miracles of this fellowship, And I remember my sponsor, he wasn't surprised at all. He said, yeah, that's what happens in these rooms. Miracles like that, so-called coincidences. For me, that's my higher power. I get so much evidence of that. I love that saying, coincidences are God's way of staying anonymous. So I love that saying because that feels really rings true for me. And my higher power comes through people, usually people that's, speaking or saying something. Or anyway, that was a powerful, powerful experience. And that was because of NA. If I wasn't doing these rooms, I hate to think, well, no, I'm absolutely sure I'd be dead. This is how much I owe NA. And the people that are here, all of you, need you all. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny to talk about this stuff, and it's like reminded me of these things. I suppose, just to end it on this, really, I guess it's kind of maybe part of where I'm at in my recovery. That hole in the soul, for me, I feel at the core of me is this stuff around I'm not okay. There's something wrong with me and all the manifestations of that, but that's the core of it. And it's for me, it feels like I know logically, intellectually, that's a load of old bullshit and it's stuff that I've just, grown up with or wherever it's come from. But I can see it takes some, it really takes work and it to sort of drip through. The feelings are a whole different ball game. Maybe that's why I'm scared of feelings. Certainly what I would think is the so-called bad ones, anger and underneath that, the sadness. But I'm much more gentler with myself and this stuff. That I am feeling my feelings now and noticing, guess what? They don't kill me. Don't die. It passes. It all changes. There's no need for me to pick up anything. It just passes. And then just pick the phone up, use the tools, come into a meeting. I've got all these resources now, which NA has given me, which I never had before. I did not have the manual of how to do life. My family, I guess the unwritten rules were that's, don't trust, don't feel, don't speak, that stuff. That's what I picked up. You deal with it all yourself. You try to fix it yourself, self-will. And now I know that fear and self-obsession are the core of me. What a relief. What a relief I can do something about it, that I got a higher power now that can help me with this stuff and that I have to take the action that and the results over. And life's a roller coaster, isn't it? It's I suppose now I don't know how again how that's happened other than being in the fellowship and working on this stuff. My head, my those thoughts of mine don't have so much power. They're still there, but there's a part of me now that can watch it and not get caught so caught in it. I do get caught in it a lot too. It just it's not so painful. There's nothing in me now that feels like it's a secret. I feel like everything consciously I have shared in my step five. What a relief, the suicide stuff, I've done lots of suicide attempts. Every time I did that, it was so much the addiction. It's like I would go full circle, go to hospital, they kick me out, I come back home and I had to, oh, it's the most painful thing ever. I had to face my children. I had to see their faces and they're like, I so often I wanted to blurt it out. I'm terrible. Look what I've done. And I had to squash it all down. It was the most painful thing ever. I was just lumping more and more shame on myself. And when I got that diagnosis of bipolar, it was what a relief. Suddenly all the jigsaw pieces came into place about my dad. That's probably why he killed himself. My granddad. It was just all this shame came off my shoulders, this understanding. And the same with the addiction, knowing I have this disease. For me, the bipolar and the addiction go hand in hand. They're wonderful bedfellows. Very difficult, if not impossible. In fact, I don't even try to separate them. They just are, but the shame that got lifted, and I never, when I came to an end, I never thought that would be possible. I thought I was carrying around the most awful shame ever. Couldn't look anyone in the eye. I never thought there was any possible way that that could be lifted from me. And I'm not saying it's all gone, but it's not running my life anymore. I can come on a meeting like this and I can share this stuff. That's NA. It's, for me, it's the most, it's a, for me, it's a God-given program, because to me, it just seems so perfect, and like it's all the elements are in there, and I've got so much from service, my self-esteem, I'm getting back my self-esteem. It's just the list is endless of the myriad ways in which this stuff is interwoven, and it just works, If there's anyone in their early days here, back from a relapse, or please just stick around. Literally, that's what I did. Just keep coming back. That's it. In the early days, all you got to do, keep coming back, no matter what. Even if you've picked up, keep coming back. That tradition free, I love that tradition. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. That's it. Desire. I've never, I feel emotional to think that. I've never experienced a place like this where that's all you need. There's no contracts. The door's wide open. You can come and go as you want. There's no fees. It's just one addict wanting to help another addict. There's no professionals. Wow. Wow. Who'd have thought? That still staggers me. Anyway, on this share, I think I'll wind it up. It's just, the, message, you know, just that we can, the promise, the only promise we get from this is that you can lose, stop taking drugs, lose the desire to take drugs and find a new way of life. Miraculously, that's what NA's given me. It's given me so much more, and I'm finding a new way of life. I'm in a new way of life. And that's this program. That's it. Yeah, thank you. It's really nice that you asked me to share. Hope someone might have got something from it, and know that just to carry the message. So anyway, thank you. That's it from me. Thank you.